This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 330. On our way to 7 times 52. I did this last week. You went 7 times 52, 364. 330. So we're not too far away from 6.5 years worth of podcast. We're getting there. All is well. I'm not coming in tomorrow. What would it be? 336 would be halfway, I guess. Is that right? 336? Sounds right. We'll say that it's right. Had a good week. Didn't quite get as far as I wanted to get this morning. I was working on one final little thing, and I had a couple of quick meetings right at the end of the day and took away the time, but I left myself a note. Start here on Monday. Was working on a little JavaScript thing, little jQuery it's called, and I just don't quite know enough about that, but that's what Google is for. So I'll look it up on Google on Monday and figure out how those selectors work, and then we will go from there. Sorry, I'm a little bit tired today, so I'm going to be yawning. We have had the grandkids with us this week because my kids, our kids, are actually in Chicago taking a little vacation. So the grandkids have been with us. So that's been very exciting. Oh, my little grandson, he calls his blanket Ginky. And so whenever he needs comfort, he calls out, "Ginky! Ginky!" And he goes, finds his blanket, and then he comforts himself. Well, he's been having a little trouble with spitting. And he knows he's not supposed to do it, but he's been spitting. So there has been a variety of techniques that has been invoked, to assist with helping him not to spit. And one of them has been 90 seconds in the timeout chair without Ginky. So I'm going to move this recorder because it's kind of squeegee out off to the side here a little bit. Without Ginky. And this is a traumatic experience from him. It was yesterday evening, I think he had taken some water and spit. And so Grammy, my wife, comes out and says, "Okay." So she takes him and, "No, no." And makes him sit down in the chair. "Ginky! No, no, Ginky. You know you're not supposed to do this. You're going to have to sit here until the timer goes off without Ginky." At one point, I heard him downstairs, "Ginky!" I told my wife later, it reminded me of Kirk in, what is it, the second Star Trek movie, "Khan!" So, but he survived it, and he got his Ginky, and all was right with the world. So, we've been having a little fun this week. That boy is all boy. It's funny. It is so funny to see the differences between him and his sister, Clara. So it's just a hoot. But Mom and Dad are going to be back tomorrow. So we have one more evening. And then Mom and Dad will be back, and I've been feeding the dogs. And so it's been a little bit of a busy week. I haven't gotten together with too many buddies this week as far as chatting goes. Have I gotten together with any? I was supposed to get together with... Got together with one of my buddies on Tuesday morning that we normally get together on the first Thursday of the month, but he had other things, and so we're finally getting together this month. Had a real nice chat with him. I was supposed to have a chat with a buddy yesterday, but that didn't materialize. So I need to chat with him and see if everything's okay and everything's good over there. But all in all, as I said, it's been a good week. Got a lot of good stuff done. Moving forward. It's always good to move forward. Should be pretty quiet the next couple of weeks because the client that I work for has something called general counsel where they all kind of go over there and work on that. So it's going to get real quiet for the next couple of weeks. Not starting next week. It's going to start quieting down next week because everything should be ready to go. I say that, but sometimes rocks fall out of the sky. There was a rock fell out of the sky earlier this week, but we were able to get it taken care of fairly quickly, and so that was good. So hopefully not too many rocks will fall out of the sky this next week, but if they do, we'll just get them taken care of. I've been able to get a surprising amount of writing done this week, despite having the grandkids with us, but that's because mostly my wife has been doing the work. I've been wandering up just to read bedtime stories here and there, and we'll probably do that again tonight. But all in all, my wife has carried the load. We have friends who became grandparents and then became parents because of one reason or another, because of the death of their children or because of the unsuitableness of their children. And, you know, I told my wife this week, if something, heaven forbid, would actually happen to Liz and Alan, and we would, you know, get the kids, I would just have to stop writing. I mean, there's just no way around it. I would just have to stop writing because having two little ones, there's a lot of work that goes into that. And my wife, you know, she wouldn't be able to get the stuff that she needs to get done for her job, having to watch over two kids, and so we'd just have to split the load. And I would have my job and the kids, and she would have her job and the kids, but there wouldn't be much writing. But parents are coming back tomorrow, so yay. But it has been fun having them. It's been a lot of fun having them. Anyway, so writing is puttering along. I've crossed 102,000 words. I think I'm at 102, I think, 1,000 words. By the end of this weekend, I should have crossed 103. We're supposedly bringing this in at about 125, and I think I'm pretty close on that. I think we'll be fine. I still have some story to tell, but there's space to get that told, and so, got to get that taken care of, and hopefully mid-August or so, I'll have this book roughed in, and then I can start editing. There's still pieces of it that aren't settled, but that's because I don't know actually how it ends yet, so I've got to get to the end, and then I can make another pass through it and kind of conform everything to that. So, there's some things I'm just taking a flying guess at this point, just throwing the stuff out there, and then I'll get it wrapped together and tied together a little later. But it'll be fine. It's always fine. Then editing up and then working on the cover. I've already talked to my kids about what I'd like to do for this next cover coming up, and I already have some pictures lined up for that. So once we get that all squared away, then we'll get it out to the beta readers, see what they think, and we'll start on number 4, which is A Seed in Secret is number 4. This one, I think I mentioned last week, I think I'm going to change the name of it to The Straight Gate. Oh no, I didn't. I was thinking about it, and I talked with my kids on Saturday when we were kicking around. Because we spent the day together on Saturday and kind of went through some stuff with them and discovered that, in fact, in the parable of the narrow door, that the NIV translates the narrow door, the King James actually has the straight gate. It starts, strive to enter the straight gate. strive to enter by the straight gate. When you actually look at the Greek, there's two different words. Jesus uses one word when he says, strive to enter the narrow gate. And later when he says, for a time will come when the homeowner will rise and shut the door. And those two words are different, even though they can mean similar things. The first word more often means gate, and the second word, I think, always means door. So I'm going to actually work that in. And that's a little kind of side thing that I can use. And so because of that, then, I'm going to rename the third book, The Straight Gate. And it's STRIAIT. Straight as in narrow, the straits. So that worked out. Going to have to go back and rewrite some stuff, but that worked out. That was cool. Just a little something, a little something. Anyways, so that's that. This week, I came across an article that I thought had an intriguing title a couple of weeks ago, and so I was looking through my bookmarks, and I thought, oh, well, there you go. And the name of the article was Why You Will Fall in Love with a Robot by Mike Eglin. By Mike Elgan, E-L-G-A-N. And he starts off by asking, will you fall in love with Siri? He said, get ready to form an emotional bond with your virtual assistants and personal robots. He goes on to tell the story about Japan. They seem to be ahead of the curve on everything in Japan. We talked several weeks ago about their little cuddle dens and places where the ladies just go at night and just chat up the hostess guys, and then, you know, they don't have any commitments, where the young women and the young men basically don't see any point in getting married. And Japan, in this particular aspect of falling in love with robots, is ahead of the curve as well. Back in 1999, Sony released a robot called Aibo, A-I-B-O. Sold about 150,000 of them before the line was discontinued in 2006. Well, these robots, they're dying now, in a manner of speaking. You know, their batteries, their electronics are reaching the end of the life. And they were saying that some Japanese owners are holding funerals for them because they have formed real emotional attachments to these robots. Real for them, not necessarily real for the robots. And this is all according to interviews with robot owners. And they're saying now that there's a new robot that's being released by Aldebaran Robotics and SoftBank Mobile. It's called Pepper. I went and I watched a YouTube video on an interview with Pepper, and it's pretty responsive. Speaks Japanese, of course. Pretty responsive, pretty interesting. It's meant to be cute. It kind of tilts its head, you know, a little, and its eyes, I think, kind of blink, and it makes gestures with its hands when it talks. And so they said they had designed it to physically move and respond like a dog. That's Aibo. They said the $1,600 Pepper robot is optimized for reading and expressing emotions. And I mentioned several weeks ago that, in fact, there... Maybe I didn't mention that. Maybe I think I did. That there is a program that's being developed at MIT that uses a camera and, from your facial expression, can actually grade what your emotion is. And so I would imagine all these things are going to be mated at some point. They said they had about 1,000 of these available for sale. They went on sale earlier this month or last month. And the full inventory was sold out in less than a minute. $1,600 a pop. If you're doing the math, that's $1.6 million. So this particular robot makes humans feel like they're bonding with a sentient, caring being, even though they know It's made from plastic and wire and electronics. Stands about 4 feet tall, 4 microphones, 2 HD cameras. Has a range of sensors for it to be able to perceive what most people are doing. Has wheels for getting around, arms for gesturing mostly. So it is designed, you talk to it, it talks back, and it's designed to help you believe that it loves you and that it's responding to you and to your needs. The writer of the article quite accurately points out that people love their dogs and cats. And in fact, dogs especially are particularly adapted to respond to the emotional looks on our faces, are very good at it. And that's been an excellent survival strategy for them because we actually take care of them and fall in love with them. There are plenty of people out there, my wife included, who, if it's a dog, you know, and it's on TV and there's any possibility that the TV show she's watching, that dog could come to harm, she will walk out of the room because she has a deep and loving attachment to dogs. People are getting killed on the screen. That doesn't bother her so much. But dogs, it's just, you know, when that happens, we see it coming. I just pause the thing and she makes a decision. And most of the time she'll walk out of the room. And I'll turn down the sound. And, you know, I'll watch forward until the deed is done. And then I'll tell her, okay. And so she'll come back in. So, I mean, people form emotional attachments, and in this article, the guy was saying the reason for that is that the human brain is hardwired to function in a social human context. And our brains process any kind of response from any kind of animal or object as if it were another person, at least to some extent, and I would add, for some people, they process that response more than others. I, for one, do not process behavior from animals as emotional responses, but we'll get to that in a minute. So, what's interesting is there are things that can help this. Obviously, these electronic assistants are being used in a lot of things now. You've got Siri, you've got Cortana, which is the Microsoft version, you've got Google now. You also have Alexa, and Alexa is Amazon's version of this, and it's used in the Amazon Echo product. What's interesting is that people seem to be forming a bond with Alexa faster, A, because she's named Alexa, she... It is named Alexa, which is a much more human name. But also, they think, because there is an embodiment. It's not just something that you have on your phone. It's actually this cylindrical object that the voice is coming out of. You see the embodiment, and therefore it's easier to map those emotional responses. Which is, you know, pretty interesting. But what he goes on to say is that all of these personal assistants and other home robots beyond Pepper will become more sophisticated, more responsible, more quote-unquote empathic enough to trigger feelings of affection. This is another one of the things that the next 20 years is going to see a huge revolution in. And frankly, it's going to be fascinating to see. I think it's pretty easy to predict where this is going, because people will begin to form more attachments to these objects than they will to human beings, because human beings are complicated, but we'll get there in a little bit. He goes on in the article to talk about the Turing test and how that it was widely reported that the Turing test, which the Turing test is, you know, the computers have achieved artificial intelligence. If when you're just having a text conversation back and forth, you can't tell whether it's a computer or whether it's an actual human being. supposedly the Turing test was actually beaten, but the way the programmers beat it is they made it sound like it was a Ukrainian boy as English as a second language that was 13 years old, so any of the oddities in English you just attribute to the fact that it was a Ukrainian boy. That's not really beating the Turing test. And as the writer of the article goes on to point out, that even when you beat the Turing test, you haven't really proven that it's artificial intelligence. All you've proven is that you can fool human beings. Because the flesh and body, and body embodiment, to get a robot that looks like a human, behaves like a human, really achieves that artificial intelligence, sense of self, all that kind of stuff, is a whole lot more complicated than just carrying on a text conversation. But I think rightly so, I'm backing into my garage. I think rightly so, the writer of the article indicates that the Turing test will be beaten in the next few generations. And probably even before that happens, people will begin to form real emotional bonds with their personal assistants and these little robots and these little objects that we put in our home. And I think the upshot of that will be more disconnectedness between humans, as if we didn't have enough disconnectedness already, because the flesh always pushes people towards isolation. And it always pushes people towards, I want, I want, I want. And the thing about all these robots and assistants is I get what I want faster and quicker. And if it can simulate something that makes me feel more valuable, if it can simulate something that makes me feel like I'm special in the world, then of course I'm going to form an emotional bond to it. And the Japanese are just a little ahead of the curve on this. I had mentioned that I kind of have a little bit of a different tact. And that is that I try to reserve my emotional bonds for those who are actually humans. Now, there's, obviously this is not going to make me popular among some quarters, but the good thing about being obscure and unknown is that you don't have to worry about that. But the fact of the matter is, animals to me are machines. They are beautiful and wondrous machines, but they are machines. And so on the basis of that, in my little world, animals do not have the spark. They do not have the imago dei. They do not have the breath. They are simply animals. And it is true that dogs can recognize your emotions, but that does not mean that when they die, they're going to heaven. And so my philosophy has been, for pretty much as long as I can remember, that animals are wonderful and they're useful, but if it ever comes to a point where they become inconvenient, or they become more than inconvenient, it becomes bothersome, and they're causing a problem, it is well within my ability to take care of that. And not just because they need to be taken to the vet because they're sick and they need to be put down. We had a cat that had just gotten obnoxious, was peeing in the closets, would not go to the litter box, would come into our bedroom at 5:30 in the morning meowing, just to be irritating. We had gotten another cat and it just never recovered from, us populating its nest with another cat, and it just got surly. And there really wasn't much hope for us to adopt it someplace else out, because somebody else would have inherited all those problems, and my wife was really distraught about this, and she said, I don't know who I'd even be willing to give this cat to, because I wouldn't want somebody else to have these problems, and I certainly don't want to keep putting up with this. And so I said, well, sweetie, I can take care of that. And she said, well, I can't be. I said, sweetie, just go downstairs, put on a movie, turn up the sound on the big screen. It'll be fine. and I took care of the problem. Because it's just a machine to me. It's just a machine. And in the same way, all these things, Siri and, you know, whatever, Alexa and Cortana and Google Now, to me, they're just very sophisticated machines. And so I'm not personally really in any danger of falling in love with any of these things. Even if, as the logical extension is, you know, they eventually end up with personal companion with a full range of services, which you know that's coming as well. Full service companions. And people will fall in love with them because they fall in love with their large plastic sex dolls at this point. Some do. So, you know, that's the world that is ahead of us. And what we will see is that people will delude themselves into believing that there is value in loving those things. And then we'll have to have a big conversation in society about whether or not it's legal to marry your full-service companion. And I'm sure we'll go down that route, too. Next 20 years, it's got to be something. It's got to be something. But none of it is really going to be as fulfilling and as challenging and as energy invoking as having a real relationship with a real human being. But the flesh is certainly going to try to give us substitutes, because if it can give us a substitute, it can keep us focused inward. And by that process of keeping us focused inward, it can make us miserable. Because you never have to sacrifice anything when you're just with your full service companion. Basically, the companion does what you want when you want it. And ultimately, that does not lead people to a place where they find themselves more loving, more kind, more compassionate, more generous. Unless it's more loving, more kind, compassionate, and generous with their full-service companion. And then that's really just narcissistic because it just gets reflected back on them. It's going to be an interesting 20 years. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.